Good morning, everyone. My name's Karen, and thank you. I am grateful. At 11 o'clock, I'm going to be much more grateful. I don't want you to think I'm going to talk for an hour. I'm just saying the meeting will be over at 11, and I'm going to be much more grateful than I am right at this moment, recovering member of Al-Anon. I want to thank Grace and the committee for asking me to do this. And when Grace called me in July, I said, you know, I was really honored. And I told her in July I was really honored, and I said in October, I'm going to say, are you nuts? What, you know, possessed you to say, yeah? And I have been going through major anxiety for like 2 days, saying, no. I told Diane this morning, I have the keys to my car, we're out of here. And she said, no, can't do that. You know, I'm doing all this till I calm down because everybody last night said, you know, everybody in AA opens with a joke. They were telling me jokes I can't use up here. Any jokes to tell you? That wasn't the kind of jokes I thought I ought to tell. So, Al-Anon says to share our experience, strength, and hope, and that's what I'd like to try to do with you this morning. I grew up, I'm Irish, Scotch-Irish, my dad says, and I grew up in a family of drinkers. None of my family is alcoholic. They sure look like alcoholics to me, and they act like alcoholics, but nobody's alcoholic. They drank a lot, they fight a lot, you know, and that's all that kind of good stuff. And I am very fortunate that the alcoholics that have been in my life have not been abusive, or I never was ashamed. I don't hate anybody. I mean, God's been really good to me in that area. God gave me a great sense of humor, which I wish I had a lot of right at this moment. It's going to be okay in a little bit, but it's not right okay. You know, I grew up, I have heard for years in AA how you all felt so different and you wanted to fit in. I always felt different and I liked being different. And I know now that that's a defense mechanism because of the way my life was. I never thought there was anything strange about my childhood. I grew up, I was a happy kid. I have one younger brother that I, you know, led around. I took care of him. He was, you know, I was the big sister, so he was such a dip. He did everything I told him, you know. He's now 52, and I'm not going to tell you how old I am, but he's younger. And, you know, he still does what I tell him. He's still weird. You know, he's not an alcoholic. He's just, you know, piece of cake. He's so crazy. We grew up moving all the time. My dad changed jobs continuously. So we moved around from school to school to school, and that became our way of life, and you're always different, you know, because you're always new. We kind of got to the point where you're worried about making friends with people because we never knew how long we were going to be anyplace. So my brother and I grew up very close. I know now, as I am like older, that the reason we moved was because my dad got fired, he quit jobs, you know, because of drinking. And my mother is the greatest enabler, you know, as we all become, you know, she justified everything he did, and, you know, he was a good guy, and he really is, still. He's 75 and still, well, he's not drinking right now, but he's, you know, up until a couple months ago, was still drinking. He's amazing. But I grew up, I felt very happy, and through Al-Anon and maybe just my personality, I don't choose to go back and find out if I, you know, hated my dad or my mother. I grew up hating my mother like all kids, you know, she was, you know, such a witch. Yeah, she really was. I mean, she was one of those little, my mother's a little tiny person, but I'm going to tell you something, there was never a shot in my, never a time in my life that I gave that lady any lip. I mean, she was one mean little woman. You know, yeah, she, like that, you know, she'd hit you. You know, you don't have to be too stupid to, you know, grow up and think, you know, they hit you, it hurts. I'm not big on pain, so I don't, you know, I don't hit. I don't look for reasons to get hit. But, you know, she was one of those people that was like she was always crying, everything's always negative, you know, everything is always bad. My mother was a great crier and hand wringer, you know, go and she'd do one of these and I'd think, you know, I was like, I'm not, you know, that lady's going to make me nuts. I don't want to grow up and be like that. So, I didn't. You know, I also had a grandmother who was my hero that just took care of everything. She was such a neat lady. And she had an alcoholic husband, a big drinker husband, and three kids that all drank. And this woman just seemed so totally in control of everything that I thought, when I grow up, that's who I want to be like. And God knows I tried. I did. I just was determined to be able to handle anything, do anything, and nothing. I would just make everything okay. I was not going to be that whiny little crying type of woman. Now, when we finally moved to Pittsburgh, we stayed in one area long enough for my brother and I to graduate high school. And at that point in time, in the 50s, I guess you either went to college or you got married, and my family could not afford to send me. So I got married. I went to work, is what I did. Now, we lived in a country, a suburb of Pittsburgh, which is, you know, and I didn't run with anybody that drank or, in the 50s, if you smoked, you were like, oh, one of those girls, you know, those girls. Yeah, I grew up with a mother that said, you know, nice girls don't do this, 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 this. I told her a couple years ago, I always wanted to do this, this. I wanted to find out why nice girls didn't do that. What the hell? You know, I want to find out what I missed. She said, oh, she was so appalled. So anyhow, I started to work, and I worked in an office that was basically young people. And I really got to know a totally different side of life. I mean, these kids partied, some of them smoked, and some of them drank. And when you live in a country, not a lot of people, not a lot of the people I know drank. And I started running with this crowd in town, and I was going with a guy that was in college. But there was this guy in this office that was so quiet and so shy, and I am very, you know, loud and jumping around and acting like a nitwit. And I thought, he needs me. Could I change this guy and make him know, how much it's, how fun it is to laugh? I thought, I'll show him what it is to have a nice, I'm it. I'm what he's looking for. He didn't think so. I would do, you know, I was kind of ahead of my time in the 70s, you know, girls started asking guys out, I started chasing my husband, I'd say, when are you going to ask me out? He'd say, you're going with somebody. I said, oh, I'll break up. You know, he'd say, so I did, and I finally wore him down. We have different views on this. He says he chased me, I say I chased him, whatever, I got him. Now, I want to tell you, in the 50s, it was not a real smart move to go with somebody of an opposite religion. My family was Protestant. My husband's family was Catholic. Now, I know how my mother felt. My mother doesn't keep secrets. She tells you right up front, are you nuts? You don't marry Catholics. And my husband's family, you know, I don't know if they ever said anything, but if they did, he didn't tell me. But when we started getting kind of serious about this, my mother said, you know, you marry a Catholic, do you know what's going to happen? I said, no. And she said, you're going to have 50 million kids. I mean, Catholics have kids. Now I have one brother. My husband has one sister. I thought, how'd she figure that? He has one sister, I got one brother. You know, they had two kids, she had two kids. How stupid could you be? Go have two kids, maybe three. So we wore these people down. We were going to get married anyway. We got married, much to everyone's dismay. And we got married, and in the first 8 years we were married, we had six kids. You know, there was a point there, I thought, you know, we were laughing coming down about this yesterday. We were talking about somebody that was planning to have a baby. I said, we never talked about that. I thought, by God, we're having enough. If we talk about it, we're going to have more. You know, I said, don't even talk about that. No, it was real bad news. Now, you know, it got so bad that, you know, my mother-in-law would go, oh, you know, do one of these. And my mother would say, you know, after I had the fifth kid, we were at my mom and dad's for dinner one night, and you know, and all these little people were running around, and she said, you know, with all the kids you had, you could have named a kid, and I forgot what she said to her. Now, I already knew I was pregnant with the sixth one, and I didn't want to tell her yet. She said, you could have named a baby whatever it was, and I said, well, if I ever have another one, I'll do that. And she said, if you tell me you're pregnant, I'm leaving for Arizona. And I said, we're going to have to go to the airport to get tickets. And wow, get out. Yeah. So, you know, it worked out real well because, as I said, my mom and dad moved a lot. So they, you know, moved out of Pittsburgh, and it was okay because, you know, I'm real grateful that my parents were not around for the next 20 years of my life. Now, I want to tell you, when I dated my husband, one of the things I liked about him was he was so classy. I never had a guy buy me flowers or take me to dinner or drink. You know, my dad always drank, but he was like... Now, we would go out, and at that time, they didn't card you a lot, and we would have a drink. And he would take me home. And I thought, now, this is the way people drink. You have a drink after dinner or whatever it was we did. And that was it. And I thought, that's how you're supposed to drink. You know, sit there and drink a case of beer, you know, yeah, watching a football game. Well, I didn't know that, like, when he was taking me home, then he would go out and party after he took me home, because I had to be home at, like, 11, 12, whatever. He'd go out and drink. And I thought, you know, years later, I thought, you sneak. You know, there was something, you know, I wasn't looking at that, folks. You know, you only see what you want to see. Well, I did that. Now, I want to tell you that I really knew I was going to change him. I'd straighten his eye, and I tried. Honest to God, I tried real hard, because I thought, guys do not like whiny, cryy, naggy women, right? Well, I'm not going to be like that. I'm going to show them how wonderful I was. And now, if you're wonderful, why would they want to drink? I want to tell you, I did everything I could think of. He still drank. The first day, 10 years we were married, we partied a lot, and things were, you know, I was real busy having these kids, so I'm not paying a lot of attention to how much he's drinking. But I remember at one point in time when we bought a house with these little people, and, you know, honest to God, the neighborhood probably thought we were nuts. They thought, my God, there she is. Every time you turn around, she's having another kid. We had different cars as much as we had kids. But one week we'd have this kind of car and he'd wreck it, and then we'd have this kind of car and he'd wreck it, and you know, and I'm thinking, some of this is bad breaks. You know, he's got to be doing. It'll be okay, cause I'll make him understand. Look how wonderful it is. We have this house and all these cute little kids, and I'll cook. He says, you know, I never cook anymore. I lie. I tell him, you missed a lot of great meals when you were drinking. I used to cook like hell. Now I don't cook. You know, honest to God, I don't. I don't know what the heck I'm spending all this money on groceries for every week, because we eat out and we only got one kid left at home. I don't know who's eating all that stuff. But there's something sick about that. I just want you to show you that I have, in my years of Al-Anon, have come to decide, and I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, and I want you to know that what I say up here is my opinion. But I have really come to the conclusion that the non-drinker is by far much sicker than the person that drinks. You know, there's a reason why you're crazy. I don't know why the hell we're crazy. Yeah. You know, the world accepts, you know, if you go out and drink and you get drunk and you wreck a car or you fall down on the sidewalk, they'll say, well, he's drunk. Now, they did not understand when I was running into these bars at 2 o'clock in the morning saying, okay, I'm here. And, you know, normal people don't run into bars at 2 o'clock in the morning because somebody calls them and says, come and pick me up. Okay, I'll be right there. Now, I wanted him to know how wonderful I was. I did everything he asked me. Damn near. I am one of those people that, you know, I just cannot allow... At a point in time, I did not want the world to think I was the reason he drank. So if you said, you know, will you come and pick me up because I don't think I ought to drive, I would do that. My husband was one of the nice guys. Like, he would drink in strange places. He never drank in those nice cocktail lounges, you know, where it was nice to take your wife. He drank in these really strange places, you know, that you'd walk in and think, don't drink out of the glasses. Yeah. before, you know, or he would find bizarre people and he'd call me and say, come down, I want you to meet this wonderful woman. And I'd say, no, if you met her, stay with her. You know, because, you know, eventually things got kind of weird and I was hoping he'd leave. But, you know, for the first few years, things were not too bad. And then at some point in time, he went into the hospital and, you know, you don't realize this disease sneaks up on you. You don't realize how the insanity of living in this disease sneaks up on you. And, you know, I knew Elmer drank too much. I suppose he knew he drank too much. And I was trying everything I could to make him behave and be. I wanted that guy that, you know, would cut the grass on Saturday morning, you know, or play ball in the front yard with the kids. Now, I was the one that was playing ball in the front yard with the kids. You know, boys don't think that's real cool when your mother's out there throwing a football. You know, when they're little, but when they're big, it's not real good. But as his drinking progressed, I did not realize how sick I was getting. And when he was about 29, he went into the hospital and was diagnosed as alcoholic. Now, as much as I did not want him to be a drunk, I can remember going into the hospital, and this, you know, hospital in Pittsburgh, God, you'd be depressed if you weren't depressed when you went in. This was a depressing hospital, and I was thinking, oh. And he said, you know, they think I'm alcoholic. And I said, you know, now I'm looking around at all these guys in this room, right? And I, honest to God, I can remember I said, nah, you're not like that. You know, you drink too much, but you're not alcoholic. You just don't drink so much. Now, we laughingly say for the next 11 years, he went out to prove he was an alcoholic, and I kept getting nuttier to try to prove he was an alcoholic. Things got so bizarre that my husband would bring friends. You know, he got to the point where he didn't drive. So, and I thought that was cool. So he would bring cab drivers in for breakfast. You know, I don't know if he did that because he couldn't pay the cab or if he just became friends with these people. You know, he would he was renowned in the North Hills of Pittsburgh as, you know, the Pepsi driver that called a cab. You know, he'd say, come on in, my wife will cook us. You know, and I would, because I, you know, God forbid I would want the cab. Or I don't know these guys. I never saw these people again. But I didn't want them to think I was the reason he drank. So I would get out of bed and cook for these strange people. You know, I was really nuts. You know, I'm telling you, folks, I was not real well. Now, he, I can remember him bringing... I got a classic story. We were talking to somebody last night that knows a guy, knows a guy that my husband works with. And I can remember, now this is how strange our life became. I can remember one night he came in at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and he said, quick, get out of bed. And I thought, he said, Bobby's with me. And I said, yeah, and now I feel this boom on the bed, right? I turn my head, there is this huge boxer dog on this bed. And I said, where'd you get the dog? He said, it's Bobby's. Get out of bed. Now on the other side of the dog is Bobby. And I thought, now I got a choice. I can stay with Bobby and the dog, or I can get up and let Elmer stay with Bobby and the dog, right? I got out of bed. And I thought, but I thought Bobby was cute. See, I don't live with Bobby. It was okay that everybody else's husband was stupid. I just didn't want my husband to be stupid. Now, I got real good at doing all kind of playing games. I was thinking about this yesterday. Somebody told me the way to keep him home is you take the keys to the car. We must have had 20 sets of keys to any car. I'd hide the keys. He'd find the keys. I'd take the money. He'd write checks. You know, I kept thinking, there's got to be something I'm not doing. So this cute lady up the street said, I'll show you how to take the distributor out of the car. They'll never get it out. I must have spent months. He'd pull the car in the garage if he'd come home. And I'd run down and I'd take the air filter off and however the hell you do that, and I would take the distributor out. I would run around with a distributor cap in my pocket or in my coat or whatever I was doing. And he'd get on and try to start the car, and of course now he would think the battery was dead. He'd call a cab, and I'd think, that didn't work. So I thought, now I have to try something else. I mean, I spent so much time and energy trying to keep him from drinking. That's why I'm so tired now. I mean... honest to God, my kids will say, do you want to do this? I'll say, nah. Oh, no, yeah. So now, I mean, my husband is a driver. He's a trailer truck driver by trade. So, you know, he was always in fear of losing his license. Now, in this span of time, I am always in awe of people that can remember dates and, you know, like on July 3rd. So I'm amazed that I remember my name and my age. I you know, I have a span of time in there where you guys talk about blackouts. I don't know what the heck I had, but it, you know, that period of time is a blank. And, you know, I feel bad about missing some of my kids. You know I was there and I did things, but there is a span of time that is totally gone. I was so absorbed with this alcoholic and trying to get him straightened out that I just really don't know anything significant that I could tell you. So we got to a point where he was extremely paranoid about driving. And one of the funny stories I have is we bought the only Ford station wagon that Ford ever made that had, like, it was 10 passenger. You know, it was great for us because all the little kids had a seat. Nobody could say, you're hitting me, get out of my seat, you know, don't touch me, all that stuff. This was the greatest car. I loved that car. We must have had that car about 6 months. Now, my husband had no aversion. He drank with everybody. I mean, we only had drinking friends, and he drank a lot with a guy that lived across the street. And they must have been gone for a couple days, but anyhow, he came home this one afternoon, and he said, quick, get your license and go with Mick. Go down to the power plant, which is like down from where we live. He said, I wrecked the car. And when the cops get there, tell them you were driving. I said, okay. I mean, I bought that. Made sense to me, because he said, you know, he used to tell me all the time, I lose my license, I can't work, no pay, we don't feed the kids. And I bought all that, you know, I'm a little security conscious. So I grab my purse. Now I get in the car with another drunk. That's, you know, how smart I was. I jump in this car, run down, and we get on. It's like 2 minutes from my house, and we get to this wreck like probably 2 minutes before Ross Township gets there. Now, I have to tell you that, like, where he did this, you come down around this bend, and as you go around this bend, there is like a little creek on the left-hand side of this road. What he did when he came down around the bend, he didn't straighten the car out, and he went across. This car was just big enough, and the creek was just little enough, that the car went straight across, and the bumpers were on either side of this little creek. And he just, like that, right? And the car's just sitting there. I'm standing there looking at this car, and I'm thinking, my God, I wonder, oh. You know, now here comes the cops, right? The cop gets out, and he looks at this car, and he said, my God, lady, how did you do that? And I said, I don't know. And he brought that, and I'm thinking, wouldn't it be amazing if we could figure out how he did that? And the cop said, you know, yeah. You know, and I'm standing there crying. I was great. I'm crying. I said, oh, God. And the cop's saying, it's okay, ma'am. So just, you know, be calm. You know, my record in Harrisburg is not real cool. You know, Elmer's, on the other hand, is wonderful. He has no wrecks, no nothing. I have all these wrecks on my license, you know. Good thing I don't have drunk driving on my... Now, I can remember at this point in time, Elmer started going into the hospital a lot to be detoxed and into rehabs. And to show the world how wonderful I was, I mean, I would run, if you could go 2 to 4, 7 to 9, that's what I did. I went down to hold his hand and tell him how wonderful things were going to be. And the doctors were going to, they would just look at me and say, he's going to be okay. And I'd say, he needs me. And they'd say, go home, Karen, we'll take care of him. And AA people were coming in and talking to him. They said, we know what he needs. And I said, no, he's different. He's not like those guys. You know, if you want to have somebody help kill you, get me, because I'll help you kill yourself. You know, I'm not going to let you get on a chute. No, I'll tell you how wonderful you are and how much better you can be. And these guys, you know, these doctors would stand there, and the one doctor was such a wonderful man. He would just like, he'd say, Karen, these guys understand him. They'll take care of him. And I said, no, he wants me here. He was great. He never said, I'm going to choke her. You know, he would just be very patient. And, you know, and I can remember one time he said, why don't you try Al-Anon? And I said, yeah, right. No, I didn't, you know, but I didn't think that was really necessary. And At this point in time, my husband started going to AA when he was sober. Now, he said to me, will you go with me? Well, I've done everything else. If that's what he needs, if that's what's going to make him better, I'm going to do it. Now, we would go to AA meetings, and I want to tell you some of my cute little stories. This gentleman sitting in the front row that we have been dear friends with for years, at some point in time a few years ago, said to his wife, what's Elmer's wife look like? And she said, Karen's his wife. He said, no, he brings her to meetings. Where's his wife? And she said, Karen is his wife. And he said, I thought he just brought her to meetings. See, we would go to meetings. Elmer would be so quiet and just, you know, go in and get the coffee and sit down. And I'd be in there jumping around and talking to everybody. And, you know, I was just great. And they'd say, what's she taking? Or how long's she been sober? You know, I was like, got to lunch, you know. And they thought, my God, if she ever gets off what she's on, she's going to be okay. But, you know, I just wanted people to know how wonderful I was that night. I wasn't crying and feeling bad. I was just so happy and so cute. And I thought, God, I'd drink if I was living with that broad myself. Now that I think back, I'd have drank too. I'd have been better off if I'd have drank. I might have been a little calmer. But at some point, you know, I was thinking about one day that Elmer introduced me to some woman. And she said, how long have you been sober? And I said, you know, I felt really bad because, you know, that's how great I am. I felt really bad when I had to tell her I wasn't in AA, that I, you know, just came with Elmer. She said, I thought you had been sober for at least a couple years. I was going to ask you to lead. And Elmer's sponsor said, no, I'll let you know when she's ready. And, you know, I felt really bad that I couldn't do that, you know. Now, it got to the point where I wouldn't even let him go to AA meetings by himself because I knew he needed me. Now, these kids are kind of growing up in spite of us, right? I also knew I am such a wonderful person and wonderful mother. They're growing up in this, what I thought was a relatively sane environment. Now, I knew seeing their dad's addiction, these kids would not drink, they would not take drugs, they would just turn out to be wonderful human beings. You know, what do I know? Yeah, and I, you know, and they were going to be, I was just so great that they would just, you know, they're all, yeah, the girls were going to marry doctors and lawyers, the boys would all be engineers or whatever. Well, as time progressed, you know, we all have to get to this program at our own pace, right? It took me a long time to realize that I did not belong in AA. You know, it's okay to go there and sit. And I really miss going to AA meetings. But when you get sick enough, you're going to find the help you need yourself. And it took me till 16, 17 years ago to realize that I was not exactly getting in AA what I needed. I love the people. They treated me so kind. There's one little group of people out here, you know, kind of accepted me, and it was okay that I was there. But Elmer was going to get sober, and I really needed a lot of help myself. So somebody, his sponsor, said, why don't you go to AA or Al-Anon, and I went, and I can remember coming home, which I did the first night I went to an AA meeting with Elmer. I come home with such a migraine, I said, you're not like those people. You're different. Some years later, when I went to my first Al-Anon meeting, I come home and I said, they're nuts. I mean, I know AA is like your crackers, but these people are really bizarre. They're saying you don't have to put up with this, you don't have to do this. And probably at that point, I was not ready. I was not willing to give up and let God take over all the things that I had been trying to do and let God take over. And I, you know, and I grew up with a belief in God, and I never lost my faith in God. But I grew up with a religion that said God helps those that help themselves. So, you know, I felt I had to do my part or God wouldn't be there. I remember I used to just pray, don't let me crack up. Because we didn't need an alcoholic father and a nut for a mother. And, you know, and I didn't really crack up, but my God, I want to tell you, I really was nuts. At this point in time, I decided to go to Al-Anon and really try to listen to see if I could get any better. Now, I know that you can only do what you're supposed to do, but I really feel that Al-Anon has been the greatest gift God has ever given me, short of my husband, my family, my friends. But you know what I'm trying to tell you. I really feel blessed that I have this program, because with the length of sobriety my husband has, the length of time I've been around Al-Anon, I swear to you, we have had more horror and horrendous things happen in sobriety than we had during the drinking years. You know, I don't know how that works out, whether you get more strength or whether you're just more aware of what's going on, but I'm real grateful for the fact that we have people to turn to, programs to use, God to, you know. I really tried to start working this program real hard and looking at myself. And shortly after I got into Al-Anon, my husband went on his last drunk, and I thought, you know, by this time I'm thinking, yeah, right. And he got sober without me helping him, just, you know, letting go, which they had said a long time ago. AA told me that, let him alone. I couldn't buy that. And I needed to do that. I needed to back off, let this man have his own space, which is what I have to do for me. He allows me to do that in our program. He needed to be responsible for his own life, which I have to be responsible for myself. And I want to tell you something, that's a hard task, because it's tough to just take care of yourself, let alone take care of the rest of the world, which I was trying to do. And things started to get better. My kids were growing up, our kids were growing up, getting, you know, graduating from high school and doing all these cutesy stuff. And now all these kids that I thought were going to turn out so wonderful, they are, they're a really neat bunch of kids. But, you know, I got to tell you, they didn't marry the people I wanted them to marry. You know, I mean, you know, they're really dumb. You know, I said to a couple of them, don't marry him. They said, you'll be all right. And I thought, I remember saying that. So, you know, through the grace of Al-Anon, I have been allowed to say to my kids, you know, you're allowed to make your own mistakes. You're allowed to live your life yourself. And I'm okay with that. I can still, to somebody else, say, she got married the biggest jerk in the world. And, you know, and I have, you know, my oldest daughter married the biggest jerk in the world. I don't know what your kids married, but this guy's a real goof, and I'd like to smack him, but I'm not allowed to do that. And it's okay. You know, I talk a lot like that, but I've never hit anybody, I told you that. Now, you know, at the point that I thought none of these kids would drink because they had to see what addiction does to you. We had our second son got married 2 months after he got out of high school. So he's been married a long time. He married a real sweet little girl. God, is she a stereotype of me? I mean, I couldn't have a kid that's of mine that is more like me than her. No matter what this kid does, he'll be okay. It's okay that he wrecked a truck. Don't worry about it. Mine, I think, oh, Linda, hang in there. You know. And, she, you know, I see me in her, but I can't give her what she doesn't want. And right now she's okay with what she's doing. So I have to let that go. You know, the third son, he started drinking when he was about 14. I thought that kid was cool. You know, he said, you know, you think everybody that has two beers is going to be an alcoholic. No, but I don't really think that. I don't have a problem with people drinking. But if you park on the yard like your dad used to do, yeah, I think that could be an indication that you might have a problem. You know, now I had, you know, grown enough by the time these kids got to be teenagers. I had had enough program behind me that I was okay when I threw this kid out with the help of the Ross Township cops. You know, yeah, I want you out of here. You're not drinking in my house. Yeah, right. You know, so I called the cops and threw him out. And people would say to me, are you worried about where he's at? No. Now, but for the grace of Al-Anon, I would not have been able to do that. But I know through living this program that I don't have to have somebody else's drink and make me crazy anymore. Okay, and about 4 years ago, the youngest daughter got married, and I still remember coming home from the wedding, and I said, Elmer, look at this, we're down to one. Five are gone, and I got to tell you that at the worst of my husband's addiction, and these kids were small, one of my greatest fears was having these kids all grow up, and I would be left alone with him. And I thought, you know, they're all going to grow up, they're going to leave, and I'm going to be with this screwball all by myself. And you know, then what? Then I got to either stay with this nut or I got to leave, right? And I thought, so I don't want them to grow up. Now, see, I got better, and he got better, and the kids were growing up, and ain't nobody leaving. And I'm thinking, for God's sake, they're going to be here till they're 90. Yeah. So when the littlest one got married, we're coming home from the wedding, and I said, look at this, we're down to one. He said, yeah, now the one that got married was 23, the one that was still at home was 24, and I thought, she was engaged. Barb got married in August, and in September, Becky said, chose to tell us that she had chosen to be a single parent, and she was going to have a baby. And she was only going to stay with us until she had the baby, and then she was going to leave and, you know, make her way in the world. Well, that kid was just 3 in June, and she moved out in August. And last week she said, I think I'm coming home. And I said, no. And when this kid had this baby, we took over the downstairs. So the one that got married, she got divorced, she came back. So we had her back, and the one that had a baby. Now we got 3 girls upstairs, you know, 2 big girls and 1 little kid. So we moved into the downstairs, right? Our life is sane. Things are wonderful. So we're living in the basement of our house, and with that, kids took over the top floor. You know, it's good, you know. I went on occasion and said, Elmer, you know, is this right? You know, we're paying the bills, we're buying the groceries. How come we're living in the basement? This doesn't make sense. But, you know, things are bizarre. I thought, this is the way life is. So when Becky moved out in August, June, she moved out. I said, Elmer, we're moving upstairs. Now, that was in June. We went on a trip in July. We have traveled so much in sobriety. This is one of the great gifts of sobriety. Now, we went on vacation. When we got back in August, my dad, who is a big drunk, got sick. We have to take him to the hospital. Right now, we go through this thing of, you know, he's going to have surgery and he's alcoholic and they got to get him off this booze and stuff. We've gone through the most horrendous 2 months that we've had in years. And I want to tell you that I know in this program that no matter how good you think you are or how much sobriety you have or how much gratitude you have in Al-Anon, you know, the reason we keep coming back is because this is a one day at a time. And boy, I want to tell you, when my dad went into the hospital, I was back to square one like that. I was back to somebody saying, I don't know what to do, and I'd say, don't worry about it, I'll take care of it. I jumped in there with both feet, and that was after 16 years in Al-Anon of knowing I'm not responsible for somebody else's life, responsible for somebody else's problems. And I want to tell you, that man who had never been sober in his life immediately learned how to pull strings. It was bizarre. And he would call me and say, I need Pepsi. I'd run right over and get Pepsi. Next night, I need bread. Why didn't we get the bread last night when we got the Pepsi? I didn't need bread yesterday. You know, You know, I'm back to square one. And I want to tell you something cute that a girl at my home group on Wednesday night said, because I would go out and I'd be like livid, I'd be ranting, I'd be beating Diane's ear off on the phone, and she'd say, you know, you got to back off, you got to, you know, am I going to listen to that? No. You know, I got to get in there and fix all this, all these years of being smart, this is why we keep coming back, this is why I'm never going to graduate, because I keep getting stupid, you know, I let people, you know, I don't let people do that. I choose to do that. You know, you think you're getting smart and somebody says, oh, I can do that. And this girl said to me, boy, you're getting better. And I said, yeah, you're right. In the last 2 weeks, I have finally let go. Listen, this is what we're doing. We're going shopping on Saturday. I'm not running 7 nights a week. I can't do this. I can't help, blah, blah, blah. I work. I can't be doing this every night. Go shopping on Saturday. That's it. She said, you're getting better. She said, you know, you were so crazy for the last 2 months. I had no notion to take you over to hell and beat the hell out of you in the woods. She said, I thought you were losing it. And I said, did anybody do that? No, nobody did. They just let me fall down the chute all by myself, which I needed to do that. I needed to be aware that sometimes we get so complacent, we think everything is just, you know, going to go the way we expect it to. And the way we want it to, and it doesn't always work out like that. It sure is tech, and not in my life it doesn't anyway. But anyhow, what I started to tell you was this: when this kid got out, I said, we got to move upstairs, and you know, we've been going through so much crazy stuff, I wanted to redecorate this bedroom. Well, we went and got rug, and as I picked out the rug, the next day Becky called and said, I can't handle living with this drunk, I'm coming back home. And I thought, I knew we should have moved upstairs. Now we're going to either have to put her down, we're probably going to get stuck in the basement again. I really think our best option is to move. You know, we can let the kids have the house. We'll go buy an apartment someplace and just get the hell out of there. You know, I am really, one of the things I am most grateful for in my life is that with these six kids all being married, we have 11 grandchildren. We just had number 11 2 weeks ago. None of my our in-law kids or these grandchildren have ever seen their grandfather pick up a drink. They've never seen him drunk. They've never seen their grandmother nuts. They think grandma's really strange, but, you know, grandma, you know, they think she's a little strange, because I want to tell you, folks, I'm not getting a whole hell of a lot better. I'm taking tap dancing lessons. Now, my grandkids think this is great. Look, grandma's on the back porch tap dancing. Oh, God, I can't. Grandma's on the back porch, okay. I said, you know, nobody said, you know, I had to get real sane. They just said, get better and get leave the alcoholics alone. They didn't say I couldn't tap dance. You know, last summer I was out playing follow the leader with this little kid that lived at my house, and we were like, you know, following the leader around, and we jumped across a trampoline, and she jumped off, and I jumped off and broke my foot, you know. And when I went to the hospital, the guy said, how did you do this? And I said, I was jumping on a trampoline. He said, oh, really? You know, now he's thinking, you know, trampoline, you know, with the flips and all this stuff. I'm talking a little exercise trampoline. It's like 6 inches off the ground. You know, we're talking, no, real cool. Yeah, I'm not really a hell of a lot smarter than I was. It's just that I'm aware, more aware of the dumb things I do. But, you know, I don't want to keep talking and saying nothing. I just can't express to you enough about the gratitude I have for this program. You know, maybe I don't, you know, I'm not capable of going through the steps and tell you how I work this program. I can only tell you that this program is my whole world. I never had friends that I called good friends that I could share things with until I got into Al-Anon, until we got into AA. You people are our whole life. I don't think we have any friends outside these programs, and I'm real grateful for that. I think there was a reason why we went through that hell, and it was to get here. I want to thank my sponsor for being here. She's a real special lady. I want to thank you all for being here. I want to thank AA. He gave me back the greatest gift of my life, and that's my husband. Thank you.